I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Ro, host of the Queen Pod. Queen have very kindly allowed us to use their wonderful music on this podcast, which is awesome. But the rest is up to us, darlings. Our goal is to provide you with an entertaining and informative companion piece to the entire Queen back catalogue, all of Queen, track by track. So, if you're in a position to offer us some support, please go to www.patreon.com/queenpod and take a look at how to get involved. Thanks so much, and now sit back and enjoy while we rock you. Hello and welcome to Queen Pod. It's me, Ro, here to tell you all about this lovely special that we have released. It is a hour-long chat with the Queen archivist, Greg Brooks. Now, if you have listened to the final episode of Season 2, our fan special, you will have heard a good 15 minutes of this chat. That is how long we were supposed to have a chat with him. But we got on with him so well, and he was so lovely and so brilliant. We couldn't stop asking him questions. We ended up talking to him for a whole hour. So this is it. This is the interview in its entirety. It includes the bits that we put out previously, just for the context of the whole thing, so it all flows and is correct. I hope you enjoy it. We all hope you enjoy it. We certainly enjoyed having Greg on the pod. So, yes, we will be back soon with lots of good stuff, including a look at Queen Greatest Hits 1, which we're very excited about. But in the meantime, sit back and enjoy a delve into all the secret good stuff that Queen have in their archives with Greg Brooks. Now, we have a very special treat for all of you, for we have the official Queen archivist, author of Queen concept documentary, co-author of Freddie Mercury, A Life in His Own Words. It is, of course, the wonderful Greg Brooks. Greg, thank you for joining us, man. Thank Yay. You so much.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's very kind of you.
No, it's been lovely. And also, I just wanted to thank you for all the little choice little nuggets that you've been slipping Simon over the last, last year. It's been so, so appreciated.
Yeah, some of them have been quite nice, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I've allowed Simon to take credit, but in my heart, I've been giving you the credit. No, they've been so nice, genuinely treats, really, really beautiful. Thank you so much. So we thought we'd just kick off with a few general questions about you, and I'm sure that the guys here have got some questions they desperately want to know about all the stuff that you know. And then I've got a couple of fan questions as well. But I just wanted to kick off by just talking about your new book that you are working on.
There's nothing new about it. What are you talking about?
just recently decided to put a book together, right, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's taken about 4 days so far. plus an additional 17 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
It's so, like the song, isn't it? It's been 4 days and 17 years.
Yes. Yeah. So, you've called the book I Want It All.
Yes.
Why is that? As in, why don't you tell us about what you've been up to? What prompted you to start putting it together, really?
It's a good question. It's been called that from about 5 minutes after conceiving it. That's never changed.
Oh, wow.
I was at Brian's, in the Brian's archive one day, sorting out his various things, all this stuff that I was doing at the time, included sorting all the cases and boxes and bags he had all over the house and various properties and bringing it all together. And it didn't take very long for me to think, actually, this would make a lovely book, wouldn't it, all this memorabilia? And the more I thought about it in that afternoon, I immediately started thinking about titles, and then I saw I Want It All single. And I thought, that really says it all, doesn't it? Yeah, I mean, there's so many people that I've known over the years, and they would all, most of them anyway, would all say, well, I want it all. If I could have it all, I would.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from, and it has never changed.
In terms of, like, is the objective to try and make as complete a collection in book form as you can out of all of the treats that are sat in the Queen archives? Or
the intention of the book really was to bring together as many things as possibly could do into one place for the first time. A lot of the stuff I knew no one had ever seen, because Brian retains the only copies of certain things, certain posters he has from the early days of Queen, and even Smile, the pre-Queen band. And even in Queen time, he and the band members would all be given things that nobody else would be given. So, for example, in 75, John Reed, the manager at the time, gave them all four of them a little gold-plated, I think it might even be gold rather than gold-plated, souvenir badge for Bohemian Rhapsody, original number one. So wow. they all got one.
So there were
one,
only ever four of those?
There were only ever four, so... Wow. Brian has things like that, and he's retained his copy. I don't know if the other guys have got theirs, but he often will keep acetates, unique recordings, all kinds of oddments, menus. If he went out for a meal, he would keep the menu. Those kind of things that nobody else would think to keep. All the tour programs and the passes and the laminate passes and all the things he would have had uniquely, including... Oh, just too many things to mention, and things that his mum and dad would have collected as well, because his mum and dad made sure they archived as many things as they could for him. And between the three of them, they more or less kept everything.
Wow.
And then when I came along, we bought two or three big collections, and we haven't got it all. No one's got it all. As I write in the introduction, nobody can have everything, but Brian's got a lot of it. And the things we didn't have, we reached out to fans all around the world. So one way or the other, we achieved what I set out to do, which was to offer... I want even the fans that have seen everything or believe they've seen everything and have the biggest collections have already told me some of the things I've shown them. They didn't even know existed, much less seen them.
Mm.
So that's what I want. I want people to open this book... And be blown away by the scale of it and the diversity of it.
So is Brian the main collector in the band? So are you dealing with his and Roger and John's and Freddie's collections, or is it mainly yours and Brian's?
It's 95% Brian's stuff. He is the Bill Wyman of Queen. Well, that's been said before, but it is absolutely true. He's the man that recognized early on these things are worth keeping.
Wow. So are there things that you ever say to Roger, Brian hasn't got this thing, did you keep it? And Roger's like, no, I chucked that away years ago. So here's some frustrating element.
Roger didn't keep a lot of that stuff. You could say he's probably too busy enjoying himself than to think, I know, I'll keep this menu in my top pocket. Brian really did, and he loves that stuff. He's got a lot of affection and sentimentality for all those little details that collectively make up Queen history. They all have a tiny part to play. So it's dealing with his stuff mainly. Roger has retained certain things. He has some diaries, which I've been through looking for things like, not necessarily memorabilia, but more information.
Right.
So over the 24 years I've been around, I've gone through everything I can lay my hands on regarding memorabilia, diaries, notes, notebooks, and pretty much by now have gleaned everything that it's possible to glean from a physical point of view. The rest of it's in the brains of the three remaining guys, you know.
Amazing. I really enjoyed your feature in that recent record collector magazine.
Thank you.
That you did. It was beautifully written, and when you laid out the stuff, you have these gorgeous pictures of all of them and just the right amount of information about each of those bits, which was really, really exciting to read.
Yes.
Is that sort of the layout of the book? Is that kind of how you put it together?
Kind of. I got involved in that so heavily because it was a nice promotion for the book.
Sure.
I also wanted to get some idea of the reaction and how people would react to certain things. So I did deliberate things, like I put some real treasures in there, real posters and Japanese posters and oddments and laser discs. But I also put some peculiar things, like the four masks of the band members, you know, the cardboard masks.
Yes.
Just to see if people hated that
really
stuff
fun.
And thought, why would you do that? Or actually, people have said that is fun. Yeah, it's nice to go from the absurd and ridiculous as well as the serious stuff.
Yeah.
So the book really should really cover everything, from the sublime to the ridiculous to the novelty and the wonderful posters and albums that you'd expect.
So, well, Greg, I don't know if you can see behind me a pretty modest Queen collection. You say it covers everything. Greg, do you have an unofficial candle of Freddie Mercury dressed as a Bavarian prince for no reason whatsoever?
Yes, that's on the cover of the book. We went instead with Freddie dressed as Mona Lisa, which I've got an item here, a framed picture that I bought at a Queen fan club convention.
Oh, wow.
Really obscure thing. We have got some really stupid, outrageous things that have no business ever to have been manufactured. But that would have been up there with it, that thing you showed me, yes.
The true test.
That's actually going in the sequel book.
Yeah, the true test of any Queen fan, Greg.
Here we go, John. Come on. Come on, bring out the big guns.
I know what's coming in.
Oh, yes. It's,
how many editions of Queen in Cornwall do you have?
Just the one, I think.
Well, that's what sets archivists like me aside from you, Greg, because I've got two editions of Queen in Cornwall, and one of them is signed by the author.
Well, I might be lying to make you feel better, because I do actually collect books. That's one of the few things I still collect. And I've got so many books, they've had to go out into the garage, because once upon a time, I would buy the hardback and the softback and the Japanese and the French just for fun, really.
Wow.
But it got a bit much, so it's all out in the garage. I got rid of a lot of my own stuff because I just don't have the room. Or other good reasons, but the things I do collect still and have kept are Japanese books and magazines, and any magazines with Queen or Freddie on the cover, and books. I mean,
amazing.
As an archivist, I need to be able to lay my hands on any book and any bit of information if I'm asked for it. And you'd be surprised how often I am asked for strange pieces of information.
So do you know where everything is? Do you kind of have it?
Yeah, I think so. I think I know where it is precisely, or at the very least, a good idea where it is. There's nothing that I would think, I have no idea at all where that is.
Right.
By now we know, we've been through all the posters and all the CDs and all the vinyl and all the cassettes and all the costumes and T-shirts. So I know generally where they are.
There's one thing in John's collection that has always surprised me and tickled me, and I'm going to throw that down. And that is the unused Freddie Mercury Christmas cracker. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
Have you got that?
Yeah, I didn't have the heart to
I mean, that
to
is,
crack it.
This feels like high-end stuff. I mean...
I'm in awe of this. I'm almost sobbing. I'm sobbing almost because I failed to get it in the book.
not too late.
There is still time, but I'm just going to pretend there isn't. You know,
that's all right. I tell you what, if I die and someone finally cracks this cracker, there's one of those gold Bohemian Rhapsody badges inside. Yeah. I'm really annoyed.
Oh, wow. I'll just have Willy Wonka's ticket. My God.
Where did you get that monstrosity from anyway?
Well, there was a themed...
Oh, Jesus, look at that.
I think there was David Bowie, Elton John, Freddie, and someone else in a sort of special edition of Christmas crackers. And a couple of years ago, this was at my place at my girlfriend's parents when we had Christmas dinner, and I was smitten when I saw him.
Is he being autoerotica, whatever it is? Strange meaning to it. Look at his neck.
Yeah, the ribbons are placed around the bits in the cracker that you grab, and it could be from
the Munich era, Simon, couldn't it?
Yeah.
By the way, before we go off at another ridiculous tangent, I'm sitting here in my office and have been for months putting this book together, and only about 2 hours ago, I came across this picture of a trout. A singing trout fish that sings "We Will Rock You." And then I saw the Mona Lisa thing, and then I thought, actually, I really should put together a 2-page of obscure, ridiculous things. So if you're able to get a decent photo of that, and it'd have to be quite sharp and ideally on a white background, nice sharp photo, I'll try and get it in. I'll use that.
Wow.
The Freddie Mercury Christmas cracker.
That is funny.
There you go, John.
That
that's a huge win. Oh,
wow. Almost news.
You think, Fergus, you can get some photos of it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I can stand it up and get a good 3D shot and then lay it down, a little bit of shadow and a good light and a nice sharp photo. And I'll try and get it in.
I will obsess about that for hours. Getting that exactly right. And do you want photos of the 2 editions of Queen in Cornwall?
No. I'll just double check anybody.
Can we hear the? Are we allowed to hear the fish singing?
You would if I had battery. I haven't got it here. It's in Brian's collection.
Gotcha.
I have got, though. I'll show you something that I bought myself the other day if you want a good laugh. If you give me 1 minute.
Yeah,
I've got
to show.
I've not shown anyone. I've been too embarrassed.
Oh, my God. This is so fun. Hello.
Hold on there, mate.
This is great.
It is great. I love this podcast so much.
I'm just so taken with the Bavarian candle.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, well done, John. My God, you've got yourself in the book. That's so cool.
And brilliant.
Right then.
Right, what's this?
Here we go.
I bought myself this box.
Okay.
£25 on the, and I only bought it for the book because I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to show you this. Have a look at these beasts. Where's the camera? Can you see?
A little bit. Oh, they're beautiful.
Oh, okay.
So it's a beautiful set of the band.
Look at Freddie. Where's the camera? Is that it?
Freddie.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Something awful's happened.
Something happened to his head.
Jeez.
Somebody said, give me a little head or something like that to him. So
it's like a John Carpenter body horror.
Yeah.
It's like when you first... guitar.
That's one of those blow-up ones you get at karaoke.
Fantastic, isn't it? Awesome. It's got to go in the book, hasn't it?
That's
when you first opened it and we saw the box
and
with all these lovely
figurines. Drum in the middle.
That looks well made.
Look.
Is he going...
When I finished
When
I finished with this
literally looks like...
By all means, feel free to make me an offer for it.
How much did you spend on these? These are so bad.
£25.
Awful, aren't they? But you'll see them in the book.
Wow. Hand painted by a dog.
You're going to see your cracker right next door to that.
It's like when I did pottery at school, that sort of stuff that I came out with. But when you first opened the book, we were all like, oh, wow, a beautiful set of figurines about the band. And as you held closer to the camera, we got to see that they are melted monstrosities. Even the Queen logos.
Generally. Okay, you've got to cover LPs and CDs and cassettes and posters and T-shirts, but you can't ignore the appalling stuff either.
Yeah,
you know, it is memorabilia.
Yeah,
and some people do collect those things. You know,
fun merchandise is always fun merchandise, right?
That's so that you'll see a bit of that in there. I've got no idea, by the way, what the band will say when I hand this book in June. It could all get just. It could do. I mean, I'm not even joking. It could just get thrown out, the whole book.
Oh, just a big red line through the whole lot.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Oh. It would be horrendous, but they may well say, Greg, you know, I know you've got a sense of fun and there is a certain amount of humour within Queen, or always has been, but you've gone too far.
Can we just say in advance, if they say that about the cracker, that was all John, not the rest of us.
There's no way I'm taking that on the chin.
When's the book due to come out at this point?
Aiming for October.
Oh, lovely.
So if I get it finished and approved by July latest, we reckon we can do October.
Oh, perfect. Brilliant. We'll be able to do a big shout-out for it when it
would be
out.
Great. I mean, it would be nice to do it.
It's going to be just huge, right? Just a massive...
But it is a big book. It's 460 pages, we
think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it covers every project you could conceivably think of from all countries.
What an amazing achievement. Thank you for existing, man. So doing this for the rest of us. Because we all,
reached the point where I didn't I nearly reached the point where I didn't exist. I can't take it anymore.
Oh, what? Because you were spending so much money on memorabilia.
I just thought enough. You know, I need to stop now, please.
Yeah, I'm so glad that became your job.
The problem I had, the massive problem I had, was I didn't begin the book with all the images that I would need all sorted. I had about 12 hard drives over the last 17 years that collectively had 160,000 images.
Jesus Christ!
With multiple dupes all over the place, because I was forever safety copies.
So I've got a couple of questions for you, and we've got a few listener questions that we thought would be good to answer while you were with us, if that's all right. So my question is, when you're wandering through these mystery archive buildings, wherever they may be, what other items in there, like maybe one or two items that when they catch your eye, they make your heart still skip a beat, even to this point where you're just like, oh, that is just the best thing ever.
You just want me to sound like an anoraki nerd, don't you?
you're fine. No. I genuinely, I mean, everyone listening to this obviously wants to be able to go into the building where you and occasionally Simon will go into, but you go into regularly. So you have access to all this wonderful stuff to the point where it's your job. You maybe take it for granted to an extent. I'm sure you don't. But on some level, by comparison to maybe the rest of us who would be going in there for the first time going, oh, wow. What is the stuff in there? Is there one or two things in there that still make you go, just stop and stare at it for a moment?
There are. I mean, it depends what floats your boat and what you like. I like, generally speaking, anything Japanese, anything to do with early Queen, and posters. So Brian has early Japanese posters, for example. They're absolutely gorgeous. He has lots of tour passes, backstage passes and laminates going right back to the Motley Hoople tours of 73. And he has stuff like that, which are amazing. But I even love things like sheet music. He's got sheet music for the first single and for all the early singles, and he's got Mexican 7-inch singles and Zimbabwean LPs and Chinese jazz albums, which we've picked up along the way. He's got things like the tour jackets that he would have been given at the time, and most of them look like they were made yesterday.
Wow, they're beautiful. In that good condition. Oh, my God.
I did a spread yesterday where I chose six of the jackets to show on a 2-page spread, and I did actually sit there for 10 minutes just looking at them, because they're so lovely. Because some people, as I mentioned in the thanks to the book, I thought it was appropriate to credit all the designers and photographers that have ever photographed or designed Queen memorabilia, because some of it is absolutely stunning. So there's lots of things, lots of things that I love.
Can I ask a couple of questions?
Yes, do.
Firstly, a lot of us have this experience, and I'm sure you have it more than anyone, whenever anything to do with Queen appears anywhere, I'll get lots of notifications on social media. And recently, probably 2 months ago, 3 months ago, there was a big auction in a local auctioneer's of Queen flight cases. There were loads of cutouts from the Great Pretender video. And did you buy all the stuff? Because I'm just wondering who bought it, because it was an insane amount of big, like, great memorabilia. And I just wondered if that got snaffled up.
I'm not always aware of them. I'm registered with about at least a dozen auction houses, and they often, it's getting too much, actually. I usually every day now will get a notification of a sale coming up, and view the auction, it says, view all the lots. But if I were to do that with every one that I got, it would be more or less full time, mm-hmm. just monitoring auctions. But it would be good to be tipped off. So if you ever see any good stuff like that, it's always good. But generally speaking, no, there was a time back probably a decade ago where Brian was more up for buying stuff like that, or Queen were. And if handwritten lyrics came up for sale, I would write to the band or to Jim Beach and say, these are coming up, do we want them? But more and increasingly, they were saying, no, we've got enough. Where does it end? So we kind of stopped buying those things. But there are incredible things that come up all the time. People that used to work for Queen back in the day are now reaching an age where they're retiring, or indeed some of them have died. And families put up for auction their collection. They go into the garage and they find what their husband has been hoarding in the garage boxes or attic, and some amazing treasures, as happened with Mike Stone when he passed. Loads of great stuff came up.
Do you know where Freddie's yellow leather jacket is? Because that was sold at auction a few years ago.
Yeah,
that
sold a good decade ago, and we that was one of the things that I did flag and say, surely we want to buy this, but they weren't really interested in it.
Oh, really?
So, which was a bit surprising, but they have their reasons. So I know the lady who bought that, and she's very discerning, and she buys all kinds of quite elegant things rather than just anything. She's quite discerning and chooses what she's going to spend her money on. And I think that went for something like 10 or 12 grand at the time. Yeah. It's probably worth 50 or 60 now. So it's a very wise way of investing your money. Mm-hmm. You're never going to get anything like that return at any bank.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, fair play. Should we have some listener? Did you have another question there, John?
Do we have some music?
Well, I've got another question, but maybe I'll ask that at the end, because it might be covered by the listeners.
Yeah, I've got a question.
Go on, Suze, you haven't asked a question.
No, because if a fan's asked it, I've trampled all over them, and this is about the fans. this is for those guys.
You see what generous spirits you've joined. they never talk like this when you're here, actually. Okay, all right, Greg.
A horrible bunch.
Well, this is really a question for all of us, but I think only you would know the answer to a lot of this, Greg, which is why I thought I'd include it in this section. So Gary Cooper, the famous Gary Cooper, has asked us, did they ever record the track Hangman? They played it live in the early shows up to 1976, but was it ever recorded? And if so, will it ever be released?
Well, I've never heard a studio recording. I've only ever heard live recording. There was talk some years ago by a guy who subsequently died, a fan called John Stewart, wrote to me and said that he had an acetate of Hangman. Now, I don't know there would ever have been a reason for an acetate to have been created. It wasn't ever considered for a single or to be on an album. And even if it were to be on an album, it would have been on an acetate with three or four other tracks. So I don't think it was ever... I've never heard a recording in the studio. I don't think it was ever going to be released in any way. So I doubt there exists any studio recording of that song.
Do you have any idea why it kind of fell by the wayside, because it just seems to have been a very popular track in their live set early on.
I don't know. It's a bit of an obscure thing, and it's on its own in that most of the stuff Queen performed in their earliest concerts before they had a record deal, they went on to record, albeit in very different forms sometimes. But most of the stuff they played live, maybe with that exception or the exception of Hangman, they did subsequently record. But I've been through all the earliest recordings, all the multi-tracks, listened to everything, and never heard that, which you could say, well, maybe they didn't keep it, maybe they didn't like it enough, but there's other things they kept which they would never want to be public, not the best performances or, you know, just a rehearsal or a run through, and they kept that. So I would have thought if they had recorded it, there would be one or two takes somewhere, and I've never heard them. So I think no is the answer.
That feels fairly definitive. In a similar manner, Mark Wade specifically said, could you please ask Greg Brooks this? Will there ever be an anthology release of Queen along the lines of the Beatles anthologies? I know there was talk of this possibly happening back in the 90s. I believe Greg Brooks was maybe working through hours of outtakes. I remember him playing some teasers at one of the conventions, which included the track Silver Salmon, which is a song I really like. The second half of Silver Salmon, I genuinely think is wicked. It's so good. I mean, I guess the same kind of answer, really.
Well, that's a big question, really. When I first started with Queen, that we were talking about the possibility of an anthology and what form it might take. And the band were interested in options. So the small team of Queen team got our heads together and we came up with all kinds of things. So I remember, for example, we came up with an idea for five boxes. And one of the first box would have the queue on the spine, and the next would have you, and so on. And we were going to split the entire career up into five sections. And then we did a three box one, and then we did a small box for each album, but realized that certain albums didn't really stand alone on their own in terms of anthology. For example, you know, people are going to buy the game and the works more times than they're going to buy just a Queen 2 or Sheer Heart Attack, because of the early albums have fewer songs that you would recognize the title of if you weren't a big Queen fan. So you have to imagine, you know, Joe Public going into a store, picking up a Queen box, seeing Seven Seas Arise, the only song title they know. So we had to think about all those things, and we did put together some really quite elaborate proposals for all kinds of anthologies. And then for whatever reason, they didn't happen. And I think it's probably true that the band think that you only do an anthology when you've got nothing else to offer or your career's over.
Right.
And their career is very far from over. They feel their career has a long way to go. So that's the sort of thing you might do in 5 years' time or 30 years' time.
Right.
But we have planned it, and we have come close. I mean, as you know, we've done the News of the World 40th anniversary box, where we did do precisely that anthology thing, where we went into the archive and we dug out at least one version of each song on the album and offered it in an alternative form.
Oh, beautiful. You've got that right, John. Did you pick that up?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
He absolutely loves it.
I asked Brian this question, and as it's so often the way with Queen, you may be even better qualified to answer it than Brian himself, who doesn't know what songs he played wah pedal on. I'm a big fan of Frank Zappa, and he is obsessive, and Ro hates it because I mention him on pretty much every podcast, everyone
bar one.
He was an obsessive archivist, so he had pretty much a recording of everything he ever even did anywhere, and to the point at which it's in its own sort of vault. My understanding from Queen is that most of what they recorded, they released. They didn't sort of work too long on songs that weren't right. So is it fair to say that there isn't sort of another 20 albums worth of rarities? It's stuff from the specific sessions for the albums, Or is there a bunker that only you have access to that's like a kind of Willy Wonka's chocolate factory for Queen fans?
Well, there's a couple of ways of answering that. The general premise is accurate, that most of the time the stuff they worked longest on was released in some form. So whatever album you care to mention, let's take Sheer Heart Attack as an example. If you went back to all the recordings we have, most of the work will be represented on the album that was released or an album later. There might be one or two things on Sheer Heart Attack that didn't make the album and wasn't finished or weren't finished because they weren't very strong. They have invariably have something about them which is nice and would be worth revisiting. But at the time, they must have thought, it's not quite working, let's come back to it one day, and they never did. So for every album, there would be one or two ideas that are either far progressed or very rudimentary, which would probably lend themselves to anthology if the band think they're good enough to be heard. They're much more they're much more willing to let some of that stuff go these days than they were when we were first asking them in the 90s. I mean, the stuff we put out in 2011 on those bonus discs, I was staggered that Brian said yes to Sail Away Sweet Sister. We thought was great, Justin and Chris and I, but we thought Brian is probably not going to let this go because it's not absolutely pristine and polished, but he did. He thought, no, it's very interesting, very nice and different. Let's put it out. So for every album, there would be something. There isn't tons of stuff. The Miracle, which we worked on last year, quite a bit for that album. And when we finally release it, you'll hear probably more alternative songs for that album than for any other album. Would there be enough for a Made in Heaven revisit type of thing? Not certain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing to do, I mean, when I first started working for Queen, I went through all the outtakes from beginning to end for every album. It took me over a year, making notes after notes on every single thing I heard. But I would do that very differently now with the experience I now have. I need to go back and do that again, looking really, focusing in on the things that lend themselves to anthology. And disregarding the things I know there's no way that they would say yes because the guitar's out of tune or Freddie's vocal is off or he's got a bad throat or it's too fast or it keeps breaking down. So I know what I could disregard and I know what things they might consider and anything in between I would put in the it's a possible candidate category.
So Brian got in trouble for mentioning on radio when me and my friend Ellis interviewed him that he'd found a very, very early recording of Queen and he said there's a chance it might see the light of day and I think Roger said no effing way.
He found it, I'm not sure. But
well, not he found it, but it exists.
Yes, it exists in the archive and has been there for a long time. There's lots of cassettes that Brian's retained which we've archived and photographed. We haven't transferred them all yet, but we're getting through them and we tend to do it on a album by album basis. So we did that for the News of the World. We listened to everything we had, including all those old cassettes. We found all kinds of things like Freddie singing Brian's All Dead, All Dead.
Wow.
I hadn't heard it on any multitrack. I only ever heard it first anyway on cassette. So that was an unbelievable find. And it made its way all the way through to the album. So there are things like that that exist, but that particular recording, we haven't known about it. We just haven't investigated it in any detail. And we had good reason last year to go back to the earliest Queen recordings and just recap. We've got to start somewhere. We thought we'll start at the beginning. Let's recap, see what we've got. And that tape came up. We thought, what is this then? Let's have a look at it. Chris Fredrickson in particular got seriously into that cassette and transferred it and we listened to it and it's not alone in containing some very significant early Queen. There are others, but they'll...
Is it pre-John Deacon early?
Yes.
Mm. Wow.
Wow.
Sweet. Wow. Oh, I've got goosebumps.
Can you text it to me?
The thing is, I mean, I can't say too
John
much.
John Strickland, text it to me. What about us? Where's the us, John?
If we were ever to do an early Queen box, let's say, just for the sake of argument, there's a lot of stuff for the first three albums, and there's pre-Queen stuff, and there's even pre-John Deacon recordings. But there are photographs as well. Doug Puddifoot took photographs of pre-Queen, the four of them sat Imperial, sitting around and chatting and posing for the camera. So there are some really nice photographs and extremely rare, and I don't think ever been seen before. So an anthology or a rarity early years thing isn't all about the music. Sometimes it's about the story and the history and the photographs. Mm. Mm. All of that stuff is fabulously interesting.
Beautiful. Come on, Suze, let's hear your question, because I've only got one left now.
Okay. It's a silly question. Well, in your 24 years of being an archivist for Queen, what are some of the more exciting things you found that were maybe thought lost? Have there ever been things that were thought completely gone and that were then unearthed?
Well, in terms of memorabilia, there's tons of stuff I've found lurking in strange places that Brian had forgotten about. And he said, wow, where did you get that poster? Can you get me one? And I said, it is your poster. Oh, is it? Yes. It was upstairs in the bedroom, have you tried the metal cabinet out on the unit? No, where's the metal cabinet? So, for example, when we did the complete Queen lyrics book about 2013 or 14, mm-hmm. I was aware of, 130 individual sheets of handwritten lyrics. So we did the book, Richard Gray and I, and we photographed them all. And then about 6 months later, Brian said to me, have you been through that metal cabinet upstairs on the landing? I said, no, I'm not aware of that. So I went through it, and of course there were 60 or 70 sheets of handwritten lyrics for the first five albums.
Oh, oh wow.
My God.
Including Keep Yourself Alive. So that was a massive find.
Yeah.
Really good. And we will update that book one day. And
does
will
it feel like striking oil when that happens?
It does a bit, yeah. It does. I mean, some people will think, so what, big deal, handwritten lyrics. But to me, handwritten by
huge.
Brian May in 1970 or by Freddie in 74 or something, all four of them. And then the alternative to that is when I was listening through the music outtakes, and I first heard Let Me In Your Heart Again, which I didn't know about, never heard of. I mean, you probably know Anita recorded a version for her solo album and Brian produced it.
Right.
But I had no idea. I don't think I did. At the time I was listening in 97, I don't think I knew that Freddie had recorded a version, or Queen had, Freddie singing. And when it came on, and it was a very finished version, right. It wasn't just an idea, it was very finished. I literally was falling off the chair. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It's so phenomenally good. An amazing track. I had no idea why it didn't feature on the Works album.
Yeah.
No clue. There would have been a reason at the time, but things like that.
I've heard often told the tale of the Under Pressure recording, where they sort of fiddling around in the studio and then they all go and get drunk and no one can remember the bass line and they come back and it just sounds so great. Is there other stuff around those days with David Bowie anywhere?
Yeah, there are some outtakes where they're working through some of his old songs and covers
John's
of old
burst into tears.
I can totally understand Brian and Roger's point of view, the band's point of view, that if it isn't perfect, we're not putting it out. But at no other area are they so far removed from the average fan's point of view, because it's just like, give me 300 gigabytes of John farting on an outtake and I will listen to it.
I'll send you some tapes tomorrow.
All Right, listen, let's close up with a little bit of fun. This has been so good. I've had so much fun with you, Greg. This has been lovely. Yeah. But Emily Redman, and I thought it
Emily.
Be...
Hello, Emily. I haven't seen Emily Redman for, got to be, 25 years.
Oh, wow.
I'm lying. Amazing. Of course I'm lying.
You don't know. My God, what a dry wit. So, her question is, do you have a favourite 70s outfit, any live gig, any member, or do you have one in mind that you would, despite the fact that it's Queen of the 70s, describe as too ridiculous even for them? This is a question for everyone, but I thought it would be really fun to ask it while you're with us, because you have access to most of these outfits.
I think you'll find Emily Redman is renowned for asking very good questions.
It's true, she is. She is. You know her so well.
I think it's a good question, and it's strange in that if I saw anybody at any point wearing some of the things that Freddie wore on stage, if I saw them walking down Carnaby Street, and you would just look at them and think, what do you look like? Do you have any idea what you look like? But in the context of Queen on stage in 75 at the Hammersmith Odeon, I think Freddie looked absolutely astonishing and mesmerising. And I didn't think for one second he looked ridiculous, quite the opposite. I don't know quite how that works. I don't know why I think it would look absurd. Well, OK, you can wear things on stage that would look absurd on the street and vice versa. But some of those things he wore with those winged things on the... of his trousers at the bottom and the winged outfits are a bit crazy, but I think he looked breathtakingly good. I always thought he just had such incredible presence, and a good deal of it was the costume. I love all, to answer the question, anything from the 74, 5, 76 Hyde Park, I think those costumes were iconic and memorable, and I love all that stuff. And it makes such brilliant footage and photographs as well.
Yeah.
It was just slightly outside of the era, only just, but we were just chatting a bit earlier about this little point before we, just while we were waiting for you to come in. And it's the tighty, whitey little shorts that he wears. Is it Montreal? Where he's barely in pants at all. And he's just doing the whole gig, and I'm just like, that for me is always so outrageous. And yeah, he can pull off anything, like, except maybe those shorts, they're probably too tight. But other than
it's because he always wears the outfit never wears him.
There you go.
If you wear your outfit, no one will ever question it. But if you're sort of like when you wear crazy shoes and it's like the shoes are wearing you, then people go, what's that?
That's why we've got Suze Kempner on the team, right there. How about the rest of you? Have you got any outfits that you just think of and just go, wow, that was nuts? And then Greg can tell us whether they've actually got that safely secured.
Oh, the red jacket on the Hot Space tour with white arrows.
Oh, they're nice. Yeah, we do retain quite a bit of costume. Roger has a lot of that stuff. I think he's quite sentimental about those things. You know, Freddie being one of his best friends in the world, and he retains his friends' jackets, and he probably thinks, I'll look after those for you. That's the
more than the menus.
I get more than the menus. Yeah, exactly. More than the acetates. Those jackets that were on stage in front of Roger's eyes so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they ran that clothes store together, didn't they? You know, I mean, that's probably a deep connection.
So we do have. We do have some of those bomber jackets and trousers and leotards. I think they're great, actually. I mean, you have to actually pinch yourself. You walk in the archive and you see one of the first things you'd see is Freddie's orange and green and white Harlequin leotard.
The Harlequin.
And you think, my God, Freddie Mercury wore that on stage.
Yeah.
And there it is.
Yeah.
That's why I wear it for work, but not all the time.
So you say you walk into the archive. Is there any... I know there have been some sort of touring exhibitions and there's the studio experience in Montreux. Are there any plans to display this stuff slightly more permanently? Because I know it wasn't necessarily memorabilia, but when they had that Queen shop on Carnaby Street, that to walk in there was just an absolute delight. I must have visited that shop 20 times.
There's been talk. Various points. You know that there is a permanent exhibition in Montreux at the moment at the studio, Mountain Studio, and that's been there probably 5-6 years, and it's quite some nice stuff there, some costume, and we kind of represented all the albums and most of them, the albums that Queen worked on at that studio. But it would be nice to have something in England.
Well, Greg, it just so turns out that we are currently in the process of securing investment for Queenland, which is a Queen theme park that we are building. We've got all the rides figured out, haven't we, John?
Right.
Yeah. They're all figured out. We know where you're going to go for your drinks, you know, and all that stuff, haven't we, Suze? We've got it all figured out. And we just thought, do you know what? That would be an ideal place.
That would be the ideal place.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Is it in Hyde Park?
I think it would be a good use for Hyde Park.
Yeah.
It's Mr. Hyde that we're getting the investment from, actually, the Hyde family.
Yeah.
So
it's called Alton Staying Powers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one. Can I? Sorry, I've got so many questions. Can I just ask one more question
before I explode?
So,
oh, bless you. You seem like you're 10 again right now, John. Well,
I've never had a Zoom call with someone I so much want to be.
Is there an opening for an apprentice?
No one's ever said that.
That is what John is basically trying to say at this point.
So say that the band said to you, Greg, we're going to put out Greg Brooks's Queen Rarities CD. We're not even going to listen to the stuff. You can have whatever you want. The first thing we'll know about it is when it's in the shops. You have permission for any recording of us, whether it's a video or audio. Are there any things that spring to mind that you would be desperate to have see the light of day?
Yes, some of the massive arguments I've heard from the
Yes!
Oh, some can of that, you tell us about them?
No, well, some of it's extremely funny. And some of it's not so funny, and it's quite serious because we're listening to four very serious people, really focused, but not always aiming for the same thing. Mm. Someone has an idea which is in absolute polar opposite contrast to somebody else's idea, and there's an argument, and the argument escalates, and it's quite funny because sometimes you'll hear Freddie trying to calm things down, and sometimes you'll hear somebody storm out,
right,
or slam down his instrument, and the door goes, and then there's this terrible silence. And then somebody say, "Well, I'll let him." So, I think if we were going to do an anthology, like I was talking about my book earlier, where it's warts and all, it's only right, I think, that as well as the wonderful music, you'd have to expose some of the process of recording it and hear the harmonious stuff, but some of the clashes and arguments as well, because that's all
part of the God
creative
it
process.
Sounds amazing.
Some of it is extremely funny, really funny.
So that means you can really go to town on the Hot Space box set.
Triple CD
box set.
He's
nodding on that one.
Actually, earlier on, in the mid-70s, 75, 6, I can remember some really aggressive comments and harsh things that you can say to someone if you know them well enough. Mm. You could put it very nicely and tactfully over 25 words and take 2 minutes doing it, or you could put it in 3 words in 4 seconds. That's what they do. They're very efficient with their words, and one of them will tell the other exactly what he thinks very quickly and very concisely. And to us, you'd think, oh, how can you work in that atmosphere? But they turned out some amazing stuff because of that process.
Did that calm down later? Like, say, by the time you're getting to the, obviously, to the miracle and the innuendo.
Probably did, but they were just four very driven people, you know, and had passion and all the rest of it. So, like I've said, if they weren't like that, if it had been too easy and they never argued, I think we wouldn't have had the great music that we do have, because it was fought for. Brian said that, didn't he, famously? Mm. Goat was fought for. Mm-hmm. And you can hear it on some of the outtakes and Freddie in the control room trying to get through and trying to keep everybody calm and focused when...
Yeah, and I think Freddie learned that, actually, on the Mr. Bad Guy experience, didn't he, where he came out of that and kind of went, do you know what, without those three guys telling me off and everything, the product, you know, if I'm surrounded by people just saying yes, it's not going to be quite as rich as it is when we get on a Queen album. It's amazing.
I think you'd have to... We'd have to offer some of that, a taste of that.
Yes, please.
For people to get a really good and accurate overview of what it was like with Queen in the recording studio, it wasn't all fun and games and laughing. There was sometimes some aggression and bad language and, you know, all that stuff happened, because it would do. Four young guys quite happy to say exactly what they think.
Mm-hmm. And maybe a couple of beers in on occasion as well.
Maybe.
Also, when you're listening to those sorts of bonus albums, when you're making an album, you don't want people to imagine they're in a studio. You want to be in another world. You want to be, you know, at the Dreamer's Ball, the Millionaire's Waltz. You want to be wherever Bohemian Rhapsody is. But when you listen to the outtakes, it gives you such a connection. So there's there's like a 4-CD version of Moondance by Van Morrison, which I got. And just hearing him in the booth going... What take are we on? Is it take four? Okay, roll take four. It's so cool because you feel like you're there in a way that you perhaps don't necessarily want when you listen to a polished released album.
Mm. It's tricky because the sort of things you're talking about, the band at the time never imagined for a second it would ever become public.
Mm.
You know, all these artists recording and never thought that those recordings would have any reason to make it onto vinyl and CD 30 years later. So I think it's difficult for them to get their heads around it. They're used to putting out polished, pristine recordings, not work in progress.
I genuinely just want an album of their greatest hits of arguments. That's all I really want. Where I'm at. Thank you so much, Greg. My God.
Thank you.
Greg, it's so amazing for you to join us.
When can we come to the archives? We're happy to come one by one if that's better for you.
We'll see what we can do one day.
Really, man. Yay!
I'm going to hear the fights.
We are, on that note, you can imagine we are extremely protective of the archive. You know, no one comes there unless they absolutely have to. You know, we're quite strict about it. As you could count on one hand the people that have been there. It's the focal point of the whole archive is the tapes and the video and the film.
I absolutely have to. Suze, do you absolutely have to?
I do have
to. You do, don't you, John?
Yeah. Oh, well, if you absolutely have to, fair enough.
I've got to place this this Christmas cracker in the archives, and you'll have a little sort of little cabinet for it, I imagine.
I understood that if you bring biscuits, Greg will let you in. That's basically how.
Which one are we talking? Boasters?
Riddle souls.
If it's malted milk, I'll definitely let you in. All right.
I can get you loads of them.
All right.
There's a shop desk down there. They sell them.
Thank you so much, Greg. That's been amazing. Greg Brooks, everyone.
Yay. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Oh, thanks for that, buddy.
Catch up. Really enjoyed that. Thanks so much. Bless you.
That was good fun.
Yeah, well done.
We could have done 4 hours on that. That's
very easily. Very, very easily.
This has been The Queen Pod, a Seven Seas Films production, edited and produced by me, Fergus March. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and stay in touch by emailing queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.